You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 27th of February, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Unfortunately, we are not live today. This is pre-recorded, but we do have our regular co-host with us today, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good morning to you, sir. How are you doing?
Well, it was 60 degrees yesterday. It's now 25 degrees today. So I'll get back to you on that.
I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't know Fahrenheit. I just know Celsius. It's too complicated for me, Matt. Are you hot? Are you cold? I guess it's bound to be some kind of an extreme because you have to switch your fans off and your heaters off and your aircon off whenever we're doing a podcast. I do know that anyway. And I do appreciate it.
My cats are confused. They don't know whether to shed or not. So it's very upsetting to them.
I bet. Well, so long as they keep quiet for this podcast, we'll be okay, I think. We've got a really interesting subject today. There's a report which has just come out, which basically shows massive, massive levels of corruption in the European Court of Human Rights. And the really interesting thing about this is that this report was actually called for by the European Court of Human Rights. And of course, it involves our old friend George Soros, who you yourself were talking about just at the weekend on the round table, Matt. A study by the European Centre for Law and Justice in Strasbourg has revealed several conflicts of interest between judges at the European Court of Human Rights and NGOs funded by George Soros. The European Centre for Law and Justice is an NGO which often appears at the court to campaign on social, family, and religion-related issues. The study has found that out of the 100 judges who have served on the bench of the European Court of Human Rights in the period 2009 to 2019, nearly a quarter, 22, have strong links to George Soros Open Society Foundation or to NGOs like Amnesty International and others which are funded by it. Human Rights Watch, for instance, has received $100 million from the Open Society Foundation since 2010. Some of the NGOs receive so much of their budget from Soros that they are, in effect, wholly owned subsidiaries of his foundation. This is incredible because what it basically means is that these judges have worked for the people that are claiming to represent the victims. So they're on the so-called victim's side. That's one part of it. And the second part of it is this is why organizations like Amnesty International, who claim to represent political prisoners and Human Rights Watch, that's why they are not interested in people like Assange, people like David Irving, people like Ursula Haverbeck. Any nationalists that are in prison will be ignored by these organizations that supposedly are there specifically for political prisoners. And the reason for that is because they are all working for George Soros, including a quarter of the judges at the ECHJ, or at least a quarter of these judges have worked for these groups in the past and gone through the revolving door from the NGO straight into the European Court of Human Rights. I mean, what do you make of this, Matt?
Well, you know, it doesn't shock me. The very existence of a court of human rights suggests a liberal agenda. I've been saying for almost two decades now that an NGO doesn't go from door to door raising its money. An NGO is the political arm of a corporation. If you go to Amnesty International's website and find where their – I think it's a partners page they call it. It'll be a laundry list of corporate America and corporate Europe. Remember something else. George Soros is a symbol. He's a very wealthy man. He's very powerful. He gives money to all these things. But he's just the spokesman for a huge group of oligarchs, all having the same agenda. They give money to these organizations. So when you hear Amnesty International or read Amnesty International in the paper, you'd have to, in your mind, say, no, this is a cabal of bankers who have formed this organization to promote an agenda that interests them. So, you know, none of this is a huge surprise. And NGOs are, you know, essentially the political arm of oligarchs. No way we can match anything like that. And governments, states, are really the only organized force that could be used against a corporation and their tax-free NGOs. That's really all we have at the moment.
I guess this gives them a cover as well. I mean, it prevents the left from going after them for the low wages and the exploitation of labor, because they can see, oh, well, these corporations, they're sponsoring gay rights, they're sponsoring abortions, they're sponsoring feminism. So it helps to cover that up. Well, the links between the judges and the NGOs are substantial. They include working for years as members of the board of directors or executive council of these NGOs. So they're not just activists for them. Having teaching posts at institutes founded by them. Being a salaried director of programs for the Open Society Foundation or associated NGOs, and undertaking other forms of paid work for them. A good example is that of the Bulgarian Yonko Grotsev, who, as leader of the Open Society Justice Initiative, defended the Pussy Riot case against Russia in 2018 before being elected as a judge of the court shortly thereafter. Have you heard of this guy before, Matt? Yonko Grotsev defended the Pussy Riot case in 2018.
Yes, I do remember him. He started in 2015. I remember he was the member of the board of Open Society Institute in Sofia until 2004. He was Bulgarian Lawyers for Human Rights. He was on the board about 10 years ago. He was on the board of the Open Society Justice Initiative in New York. This guy's name has gotten around quite a bit. But the issue here is that for some of these countries, their legal system hasn't yet completely transferred over to what's normal in Western Europe. The way that they've done it is that private corporations have set up these corporations. I mean, Albania is the worst, has set up these corporations in Eastern Europe that then trains these judges. In my paper on Albania, the entire judicial branch was trained by the private sector coming from oligarchs. So the only way that they were able to get judges that could function in Western Europe would be through these organizations. Even in the 90s, you know, their whole legal transition was financed from abroad. So there is no way. I mean, by the way, this guy got his law degree from Harvard. All these guys, they're more Western than they are Bulgarian or Hungarian or anything like this. You know, he speaks English with no problem. You know, the guy's about as Bulgarian as Stanley is. So, you know, that's where these judges come from in the first place.
And they're used as a battering ram against the traditionalist country of Russia. That case in particular was used as a battering ram against them. And this is why we had all this support for them in the West, is through the connections that this Open Society Institute has. The study does not include less formal forms of collaboration with NGOs, such as occasional work for them. This means that the links are even greater than those specifically addressed in the study. The report also covers other human rights officers, such as the Commissioner for Human Rights at the Council of Europe from 2012 to 2018, Nils Muzynieks, who does not sit as a judge, but who was for years a salaried activist of the Open Society Foundation in Latvia, and who has used his official position to campaign against the so-called anti-Soros legislation in Hungary. So this ties in with that as well. This is all to protect Soros. Have you heard of this guy, Matt, and his campaign against the anti-Soros legislation?
No, I haven't. Not him in particular. But I just assume that anyone who's fighting this is working for or has some tight connection with an NGO. I mean, that is the left in Eastern Europe. In the Baltics or anywhere else. you know, the author of the article for RT or, you know, in this report, the assumption is that this court should function like a court. But that was never its purpose. This wasn't an activist group that happens to wear some kind of a robe and has used some kind of legal terminology. But this whole thing was – it was never meant to be objective. And to put that standard on them is you know, these guys are well aware of their bias. Now, we could use the public perception they're supposed to be objective. But yeah, that was never their intent. That was never the point of these things. It's like telling a journalist for the New York Times that they're biased. You know, they're saying, no kidding. That's why I became a journalist in the first place, is to push this agenda. That's why I've been hired. They're aware of all of this. And I think what makes this report interesting is that these guys would occasionally step down for a case, but they're not doing that anymore. They have such a level of arrogance and confidence now that they're not stepping down. They're actually ruling on these cases. And I think that's what really provoked this report to be written, is that they're not stepping aside or, you know, and allowing this case to go without them and then coming back on. They're actually writing opinions.
Well, this is it, isn't it? You know, they've got an interest in the case, and yet they are there judging on it. I mean, this has crept into the courts in Britain as well. We've got a Supreme Court in Britain, and they are all left-leaning. They're the ones that tried to stop Brexit last year and ruled that Boris Johnson couldn't use parliamentary prerogative. He couldn't prorogue Parliament because he had a multitude of motives for doing so. It's not up to them to investigate what motive he has to use a parliamentary process. They're going to have an investigation into that as well. So this isn't just at the European Court of Human Rights. This is creeping its way through our legal systems. These NGOs are extremely active at the ECHR. The Helsinki Foundation for Human Rights in Poland filed 16 applications and defended 32 cases in 2017 alone. Very often, the role played by the NGOs does not appear in the court's records, but has to be discovered from the NGO's own reports instead. For instance, a case can be defended by lawyers from one NGO with pleas heard from other NGOs as third parties, even though the other organisations are in fact financed by the same source as the applicant, usually Soros. So that means that, you know, they're fixing the outcome of these cases. He's funding both sides, both of these NGOs. Is that really what this means, Matt? That they're funding both sides. You know, the for and against is still being funded by Soros. So the outcome is already predecided with these judges being on side as well.
That's what it means. It's whether or not a lawyer can function as an individual versus a lawyer functioning as a member of a law firm versus a lawyer functioning as a member of an organization. And I think what the report says when, you know, talking about they have to learn it from the NGO themselves, is that they'll brag about it. They'll say that, oh, we won such and such a case, even though their name doesn't appear. I don't know if they have friend of the court briefs like they have in the US, but that's not official. That's just trying to nudge them in the right way. But I don't know if they have that in Europe. But then there's also the concept of research. These NGOs are financing researchers that could produce all this information for one side or the other, not to mention providing witnesses. You know, NGOs have a huge part of Greta Thunberg's movement. You know, these are political weapons that the oligarchs use. And of course, just like in the US, they have, you know, training sessions for judges. You know, even after they're sitting in the United States, the feminist movement, you know, so-called domestic violence people, they train judges. They have meetings once a year. The Anti-Defamation League in the U.S. is doing the same thing. Now, I don't know exactly what training refers to, but you know, they lecture to judges all the time. ADL does the same thing for sheriff's departments and police, state police in this country. So, you know, this is an assault on. The independence of the judiciary is kind of important when it comes to, you know, basic legality. The law has to be right in the first place, but to have a judge that has a political agenda is disastrous. It doesn't matter what ideology you happen to hold; it completely perverts the whole. They become dictators. because there really is no check on them once they're now in the European Court of Human Rights. Their mandate is 9 years, and they're not allowed to take part in anything. So if these guys are taking part of these organizations in that 9 year period, they're going to be in trouble. I don't know what the punishment is. So yeah, this is a gigantic assault, and hopefully what it's going to do is remove any legitimacy that court ever had with the general public, if this ever makes it to the general public.
There would not be anything wrong with judges having exercised a salaried activity for an NGO prior to becoming a judge, if these same organisations were not themselves active as parties who bring cases to the ECHR, either as applicants themselves, as lawyers for applicants, or as third parties giving supposedly expert evidence, but in reality, lobbying for a cause, and if those judges did not then hear those cases. Now, this reminds me of cases that we've had in Britain against nationalists, and there have been third parties supposedly giving expert evidence, and they're actually left-wing activists. And it can be shown that they're left-wing activists, and yet they are supposed to be disinterested third parties giving expert evidence on the so-called far right. And, you know, they're supporters of Antifa. They're members of these Antifa organisations. So this is not just going on in the European Court of Human Rights. This is going on over here as well. Indeed, the report's worst finding is that in 88 cases, judges sat on the bench ruling on cases brought to the court by NGOs they had previously worked for without declaring a conflict of interest and without withdrawing from hearing the cases. In one case ruled on in 2018, 10 out of the 14 NGOs that had brought the case were funded by the Open Society Foundation, while 6 out of the 17 judges who heard the case themselves had links to the same Soros-funded group. The judge's refusal to withdraw is a disgraceful professional failing, which shows that Europe's supreme human rights body is not, in fact, independent, but is instead part of a veritable human rights industry, a pyramid of money and a tight network of professional relationships, at the top of which sits George Soros with his billions. NGOs are supposed to represent civil society, independent of states. In reality, a very large number of them are the creation of actors with no democratic legitimacy, like the Open Society Foundation. I mean, it would be great if we could get an NGO to represent nationalists, but where are we going to get the funding for that? It's all very well them saying, well, we need to have these non-governmental organisations. But what it basically means is that corporations can build up these groups to having an equivalent amount of power as the state, so much power that they can actually subvert the courts like this. I mean, here it is. It's now in writing. I mean, we've said about this before. We've said there is corruption in these courts. And now this report is showing it there, that these judges are sat there on all these cases whilst having all these connections with the people that are actually bringing the cases to them. I mean, by all rights, all those cases that they've heard, you know, they should be null and void.
They absolutely need to be reversed, and hopefully this report will lead to that. But I'm thinking that the cause of this was a something written in 2017. Back in 2002, there was a case from the same court. I'm sorry, 2011, when George Soros bought the part of the privatized Société Générale Hughes Bank in France, and he bought this part of this, and the stock went through the roof, and so there was a investigation into insider trading, and George. George lost the case, and he went to the ECHR to appeal. Now, I'm not sure why they would appeal something like this, that you could use them for whatever, and he didn't win. Now, this is in 2011. He lost his appeal. At the time, you had Soros-oriented judges there that stepped down for that particular case. Now, this was part George Soros personally bringing a case, which may have had something to do with it. But the fact that he lost may have gotten him saying, we can't have this anymore. We can't have We can't have judges stepping down when, you know, even as blatantly as me personally bringing a case here. So that may have been 2011 may have been where the final sentence came down, and he may have just been angry and said, we can't do this. This may have had something to do with it. But the very fact that it's more than just human rights, if he could bring an appeal to a financial case to the Court of Human Rights, that means these guys can rule on anything. I thought it was just, religious or ethnic kind of cases, but apparently that's not what it is. It's just meant as it's placed for someone like him to appeal when he doesn't like a ruling. I know like Ukraine has done this, trying to bring cases to the EU because they didn't like something. This happens all the time. Countries not even in the EU try to use this as a way to batter someone that they don't like or an outcome that they don't like. So once George Soros lost in 2011, he said, you're not stepping down anymore. And I think that may have been the beginning of this.
Well, it does look like they haven't always, continued to stay judging on cases that they are involved in. They have said in the past that they were involved, but they just suddenly stopped doing it. The fact that this corrupt system has been able to flourish has several causes. The first is that Soros and the NGOs he finances dominate the human rights industry across the Balkans and in the Baltic states. His millions flood these small poor countries. He has spent $131 million in Albania since 1992, for instance. And they in turn appoint judges to the ECHR, which rules on human rights issues for the 47 member states of the Council of Europe. Indeed, the report finds that the total spending of the Open Society Foundation in Europe, $90 million a year, actually exceeds the annual budget of the European Court of Human Rights, which is $70 million a year. Second, new procedures introduced in 2012 specifically provide for NGOs to take part in the selection procedure for judges at the ECHR. These NGOs can propose candidates, and they can lobby for their selection. They have done this on many occasions, as the report shows. In the case of Albania in 2018, for instance, two out of the three candidates were executives of the Open Society Foundation, and one of them was elected. Finally, there is no requirement that people appointed to be judges at the ECHR have any judicial experience at all. Some 51 out of the 100 judges who have sat on the ECHR bench since 2009 had never been judges or magistrates before. Instead, they were very often human rights activists working for Soros or one of his front organizations. So we've got 3 points there. We've got the money that he's flooding in, which is more than the money that the court gets every year. Secondly, the new procedure, it says that the NGOs can nominate judges and lobby for them. And thirdly, because you don't even need to have any judicial experience at all to be a judge. So it's basically just activism from the top to the bottom. It's left-wing progressive activism. What do you make of these 3 points here that he identifies as being the cause of it, Matt?
Well, the last point I made was the first thing I said. This isn't a court. I mean, the fact they use the word court doesn't mean that, there's people, with gavels, and that's not what this ever was. The very fact that it's called a Court of Human Rights, and human rights is this, wish list of the left. That's all this was ever meant to be. The author of this, the article from RT that talked about the report is from Oxford. He's a mainstream figure and he kind of, he has the impression that this is a normal court that just has a specialized function. But otherwise, has the same procedure. They don't. These are, they always have been, and they were always meant to be, liberal activists that if you don't like what a country does, you don't like what something happens to you, especially if you're the right gender or skin color, you run to them and they will, they'll at least try to rule the right way. This isn't a court. It doesn't follow those normal kind of procedures. They're activists. They were meant to be. So to condemn them for it, you're not really, they no kidding. That's what we are. But it's just public ignorance that's how they hide behind. The press will refer to these guys as a court like it's a normal case and everything else. That's not how this works. Say academics in American universities, they're not in my field anyway. They're not supposed to be teaching. Their job is activists or journalists in the New York Times. They have no obligation to tell you the truth. Their job is activism. This is how the left functions. They've taken over these institutions. They've created these institutions. And this is how they rule. And that's what this is always have to be. The fact that they don't need to be lawyers, or really have even judicial experience, have been on the bench anywhere. They could be anybody. That's what this always has been. Now, finally, this report is letting people know, the eight people who are probably going to read it, that was never meant to function as a normal court. This is simply activists who enforce the ideological part of the EU's mandate.
Well, they're so entrenched, they can actually allow this report to go ahead. As I said at the beginning, this is a report that was commissioned by the ECHR. So, they're so arrogant and so entrenched, they obviously don't think this report is going to harm them in any way. The result is that the judges who sit on these bodies do not, in fact, behave as judges should. The role of the judge is to say what the law is, not to say what he or she thinks the law should be. Unfortunately, this is exactly what judges at the ECHR and at the new international tribunals do. In 1978, the ECHR proclaimed that the convention was a living instrument which must be interpreted in the light of present-day conditions, and that therefore its judges had the right to read new things into the convention instead of agreeing to be bound by it. Such judicial activism is a travesty of the rule of law. It is a travesty because the areas in which ECHR judges exercise their judicial activism are precisely the most politically sensitive issues, which should properly be decided by politicians in elected parliaments or by referenda, and not by an elite caste of unaccountable activists. Those areas include freedom of expression, asylum, LGBT rights, conditions of detention, minority rights, and so on. Using their freedom to make up the law, ECHR judges have over decades applied a new vision of man, which is the opposite of the original intention of the convention, which was to protect human beings and their families from abusive state power. Now the ECHR spends most of its time demanding more state power for this or that fashionable woke cause. George Soros has long been attacked for the excessive political power his gigantic fortune has bought, especially in post-communist Eastern Europe. This report by the European Centre for Law and Justice is, however, one of the first occasions in which the corrupting effect of that power has been scrupulously identified and documented with respect to the supreme body charged with protecting human rights in Europe. To date, the ECHR has not denied any of the facts outlined in the report, and to the extent that these facts cannot be denied because they come from the ECHR itself, its credibility as an independent judicial body now lies in ruins. Which we'll just have to wait and see what the outcome of that is. But this convention that they're talking about here, Matt, I mean, he has this idea that convention, it was originally intended to protect people from the state, protect people like us that need our freedom of speech, because it does say in there that we should have the right to discuss whatever ideas we have, even if the state doesn't like them. We have the right to discuss them across frontiers and boundaries, and we shouldn't have any boundaries at all to what we say, so long as we're not inciting violence against anybody. But we should be able to talk about anything, because it's been brought up quite a lot that a lot of this hate speech legislation goes against the Human Rights Act and the freedom of speech that we're guaranteed under it. So how this has changed is these activist judges, instead of saying we've got to stick to this constitution that we have here, what they have said is, well, we have the right to reinterpret it and change it in the light of the present day.
Well, that's what happens in the U.S. every day. Strict constructionists versus their opponents. He's being extremely naive here, because all judges, the whole point of the judicial system is to protect people from excessive state power. That's the point of it. That's why you have any judge has that purpose. So this guy is being very naive here. This was always the intent of this body. And if they're not going to be strict about the U.S. Constitution, they're not going to be strict about anything else. The court system is a very convenient way to overthrow laws and ideas and people that the regime doesn't like. George Soros is just one cog in the regime's billions and trillions of of dollars and euros that they use to control people. All judges exist for that purpose. There's nothing special about the ECHR in that regard. So the guy who wrote this is extremely naive. The entire point of these guys are doing exactly what they were appointed to do. They're doing exactly what they were supposed to do. And it doesn't matter whether they're financed by George Soros or Goldman Sachs or the Bank of England. It doesn't make any difference. They're all doing the same thing and have the same agenda. Soros is just willing to have his face plastered everywhere. The rest of them aren't. But that's what a judge does. These guys aren't even judges. So this whole thing – and he's right. It's the first time this has been scrupulously documented. But this has been talked about for many, many years now. There's just one excellent reason for countries to laugh at the Court of Human Rights. Anything goes before them, you simply ignore it because it has no legitimacy. But this was its purpose. It's not going against anything. You know, I'm sure we could write a decision that could cancel any kind of – you know, you don't have a First Amendment there because you have other parts of that convention that could be used against it. You know, freedom of expression. And this is what judges have been doing for decades and decades and decades. And so this guy is highly naive in saying that this specific role of this court is to protect people from the state power. That's the role of any court.
Well, this is what the people that voted to leave the EU, this is what they were wanting to leave, was this court of human rights. I mean, the idea is that the politicians make the laws and the judges are supposed to interpret those laws as to how the politicians intended them. They're not supposed to interpret them in the light of whatever the most fashionable cause of the day is. They're specifically not supposed to be interpreting things in light of the fashionable cause of the day. They're supposed to interpret it in the way that it was written, in the way that the politicians intended. So it's great that this is being exposed. Great that we've managed to cover it today, because I can't recall anybody else bringing this up. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.